Okay, we are. I've decided to go ahead. This is still 79, and it is going to be Esoteric Astrology Adventure number 79, Section E. So it'll be a 5-hour program, but I think it will be divided up for most people. If you have a very, very fast download system, of course, it can work in this way. DK has been talking about the exaltations, and he will talk about detriments and falls of the various planets in the sign Scorpio. It tells us something so important. I mean, you know, even though we do not have Uranus as one of the rulers of Scorpio, because it is the exalted planet in Scorpio, it gives us a very strong presence in Scorpio. So the reversing, revolving, revolutionizing, revolutionary tendency in Scorpio is very strong, to turn things in the other direction and to start a new and better way of living, to overthrow static conditions, to undermine them, to attack the lower ego with all of its authoritarian power gathered over many millennia and even millions of years of ignorant devotion of the consciousness to that lower ego, to that sense of self, that limited sense of self. Scorpio can overthrow all that, can undermine it through the power of Pluto saying, no, this is not what you are. So Scorpio stages the release of Leo by attacking the walls, the fortified walls of the ego, maybe by undermining them psychologically and saying, no, you are something else, and a new stage of identity can be established. So often the signs are interactive in ways that we hardly suspect. All the forearms of the fixed cross interplay with each other, each giving gifts to the other. One could almost look at how that might operate. You know, Taurus gives light to the Leonian ego, allows it to expand into a higher ego. It gives light to the self-deceptive, the deceiving Scorpionic situation mired in glamour and illusion. Taurus floods with the greatest light the group consciousness, helping to make it the universal consciousness, and so on. We could start with each one of the signs of the zodiac on the fixed cross, and we could show the gifts, you know, that it could give. I'm almost tempted to do that. I mean, it's just kind of spontaneous, but Leo reveals a higher self, a soul, as an objective to Scorpio, and inclines Scorpio to want to overthrow the lower version of it. So, I am that and that am I. I am that. The I am that and I am that and that I am aspects of Leo reveal the worlds of glamour in which Scorpio, subject to all the lower desires, has been functioning. And the gift of the true, talented, expressive self is given to the group in Aquarius, so that we realize that the fulfilled group has to be filled with fulfilled individuals, each expressing their purpose as fully as possible. Otherwise, we just get regimentation of a aggregation of similarly thinking people, no true group at all. And Leo reveals that the greatest light, reveals to Taurus that the greatest light is seen only when one realizes oneself to be the one light, the one identity. It is to this greatest of identities that the true light of universal selfhood, the greatest light, is revealed, and so forth. Scorpio gives gifts too, of course. It undermines the lower ego of Leo. It enters into the group process and divests it of the various group glamours which are running so rife in much group process. It deepens the whole psychological relations between the group members. And as we've already spoken, it releases the material adhesions of the average Taurus individual, who is mired in lower desire, and Scorpio provides the attachments, the detachments from those kinds of ordinary desires. The Buddha had a lot of Scorpio in his nature. In a way, being born in Taurus, his monad was in that incarnation working through the sign Scorpio. And he certainly gave the great power of detachment to human beings. Maybe the Scorpio aspect of the Buddha is not often considered. I think, you know, DK hinted at a Pisces rising sign like other world saviors, Master KH and so forth. Probably the Christ, maybe. Certainly a strong Pisces in the horoscope of the Christ, I do believe, identified with that most powerful of the decanates, of the three cosmic decanates, which I think is Pisces, at least in relation to our system. And then what can Aquarius confer? You know, liberation. Well, it certainly, to the acquisitive and material-minded Taurus, it shows the beauty of sharing and circulation, not just grasping. To the Leo, obviously, it makes the individual, the group-conscious individual, and to Scorpio, it shows how the lower types of desires can be released into a higher universal process. So instead of a concentration of poison that we can find in the lower Scorpio behavior, there is produced a thoroughly expanding elixir of life, which is available to all, and which redeems the negative situation and makes it full of universal love and light and power. Every cross will find the signs which are enhanced by the other members of that cross. You know, Cardinal Cross, Aries, giving to Cancer, giving to Libra, giving to Capricorn, and each one of them giving to every other. That's the virtue of them coming together in that sort of tightening four-leaf clover configuration, which converges into the center and then rises to the peak of the pyramid, which synthesizes them all from a higher level. So, you know, I'm quite impressed here by what the Tibetanist said about Uranus in Scorpio, how powerful this sign is for, for advancing Scorpio people. They may not yet be conscious of the soul, but they are conscious of wanting something better, even if it takes death and destruction to get it. And then the true individual who is the disciple, and those individuals know what they're doing, and they know why they are attempting to overthrow old conditions, to bring death to those old conditions, to undermine them, to shed the disillusioning light of Mercury upon them, to enter into the conflicts of Mars, the frictions which lead to the revelation of the greater light. So, you know, in this great science of relations, everything aspects everything else, everything affects everything else. Every planet affects every other planet and every sign, and every sign affects every other sign and every planet and so forth. And we simply have to get the sense of how they interplay with each other. That is terribly important. It's not exactly like writing a book where I would thoughtfully weigh every word, but I seek at least to convey the idea, the ideas that come to me, and maybe others can refine the presentation if they find that some of the ideas are useful. Now we have Venus, which in this case represents the intelligent mind. We're not dealing with the Buddhic aspect of Venus. It's a planet on which the Buddhic energy is now very strong. And it has a very strong second and sixth ray on the monadic level, as I see it. So it's correlating with Buddhi, which is the love, wisdom, and the sixth principle. Venus, the intelligent mind, though, emphasizing more the fifth ray, has its power lessened. This is called detriment, has its power lessened in this sign because the intellect, which is, you know, so strong in Scorpio initially, through Mercury, I believe, has been developed and used, and oftentimes in Scorpio has been developed and used. But now we're talking about the point at which the person is really advancing spiritually, and so can allow Venus to fall, or rather to be in detriment. And, you know, there are other reasons about not having so much to do with intellect, but simply with the power of attraction, being attracted to that which is just no good for you, that which must be relinquished, fatally attracted. I sometimes joke that, you know, that old movie, Fatal Attraction, is very much Venus in Scorpio, an obsessive, irrational attraction, which eventually, you know, leads to the destruction of the one attracted. So Venus, the intelligent mind, has its power lessened in this sign because the intellect, having been developed and used, must now be subordinated to the higher power of the soul, the spiritual intuition. Well, Venus is going to be, in a way, this aspect of Venus, subordinated to Mercury, subordinated to Neptune, subordinated to Uranus. All of these active in the spiritual triad. So we need the intuition here, and Mercury, being so powerful in Scorpio, an intuitive planet, Scorpio being associated, and Mercury too, with the intuitive plane, the Buddhic plane, we can see how this subordination would occur. So when we deal with, let's say, Neptune-Venus aspects, we're dealing with intuition and intellect, if we emphasize the fifth ray of Venus. When we have Uranus and Venus, it's not only new and or deviant forms of art, it is the power of the archetype intuitively revealed over the power of the intellect. So something higher from the triad comes in. And same with Mercury. Because we can consider these planets in various of their modes of expression. We need not only consider them monochromatically. They are operative at many different levels. So if we consider the fifth ray aspect of Venus, which is intellectual, we don't have to consider the intellectual part of Mercury. We consider its intuitive nature, which is in a way truer to its true soul nature. It has a lot of third ray in it in a lower sense, which is strictly speaking intellectual. But its soul ray, most probably, is the fourth ray. I mean, DK tells us that fourth ray comes from Mercury. It's probably a soul ray. So there we're dealing with the power of Buddhi to dispel illusion. The illusions often caused by the divisive intellect. So when we're comparing planets, the thing is to know what level of the planets we may be comparing. There's ways in which Venus is higher than Mercury, but there's ways in which Mercury is higher than Venus. It depends on the level. If I, for instance, you know, I mean, you know, just showing you, if I say, well, Neptune rules the astral body and Venus rules the light and love of the soul, well, then Venus is higher in that respect. But if I look at Neptune as ruling the Buddhic plane or involved with the monad as ruler, co-rulers of Virgo and Pisces, or even involved with the cosmic astral plane, then obviously Venus is much higher than Neptune. So there's a certain relativity here that has to be clearly seen to make our interpretations correct. So the spiritual intuition comes in, and Venus through Scorpio and its rulers, and the intelligent mind, per se, which has been utilized very much in Scorpio, is beginning to fade out and give way to this straight knowledge, which simply knows. Pure reason simply knows. Mercury is connected with pure reason and is the major ruler of Scorpio. It just knows. The son of mind, the solar angel, must now manifest as the son of God. I suppose this is man, who is the solar angel from a certain point of view. The solar angel has bestowed much upon him, and he has now solar angelic qualities. And if the fourth initiation is coming about, and somehow Scorpio is involved in the release of the solar angel onto the Buddhic plane, then we have, again, this connection, which releases the solar angel from its mental duties. And so the normal functioning of the solar angel, which is to enhance the mental illuminative power of the mind and of the man, is now involved more in a Buddhic or intuitional expression and is really released from its duties under the power of Scorpio. Sometimes I look at Scorpio and Leo together and I say, well, you know, Leo is the causal body, Scorpio is what kills it, and releases this Venusian causal body into a more Mercurian, Neptunian state of consciousness found within the spiritual triad at the time of the fourth degree. Anyway, the son of mind, the solar angel, sometimes man is called the son of mind, but the solar angel is more than the son of mind, but here it's called the son of mind because I think it's related to what a man must become when under the influence of a solar angel. The son of mind, the solar angel, must now manifest as a son of God. This solar angel, when in control, must give place eventually to the presence. We stand within that presence increasingly after the third degree and are liberated into that presence when the solar angel leaves. Thus, it is the angel of the presence. It veils the presence, and when it is released and returns, the presence is made increasingly real as the consciousness is focused within the cosmic ethers and first upon the Buddhic plane. I would say a whole lot more of the presence can be appreciated from the Buddhic plane than from even the higher mental plane. And increasingly the presence is revealed on all of the cosmic ethers after the solar angel leaves. This solar angel, when in control, must give place eventually to the presence. We don't find the presence except in the cosmic ethers and beyond, the monad probably being for us the best encapsulation or representation of the presence of God, the planetary logos, God, the solar logos, and so forth. This, it, the solar angel, has hitherto veiled or hidden, because it is the angel of the presence, meaning that we may be led into the presence through it at first, brought towards the presence, but as the solar angel begins to dissipate, well, it doesn't really dissipate, but its presence within us begins to dissipate, then a truer presence, which it has been veiling, is revealed to us. So Venus, in a way, gives way to the monad. Venus, and how should we judge the monad? Should we call it Jupiter? Should we call it Uranus? Should we call it Neptune? Those are all monadic planets. This it is hitherto veiled or hidden. Venus must wane. And the sun, another great symbol of the monad, Venus must wane. And the sun, as the symbol of deity, which for us is the monad, must wax in influence and finally take its place. The full light of day is to be revealed. That is the light connected with Scorpio, the light of day. We can't think of a better way to reveal the light of day than through the sun. Venus may reveal a great light at night, but not during the day. It must wax in influence and finally take its place. Such are the symbolic and esoteric significances. Well, we're trying to come in touch with the solar angel so we can embody it ever more fully and have that fully expanded and beautified causal body which is filled with skill and capacity. But one day all that beauty must be destroyed and one of the various ways that the causal body is destroyed. And Scorpio is a great destroyer. And so because of the influence of destruction, Venus as the intellect fades away. Maybe more of its Buddhic content will come into expression. It does have quite a bit of Buddhic content, and as I said, a very strong Buddhic rays on this higher levels of expression. So intelligent mind gives way to the presence, to the sun, to being. Mind gives way to being, symbolized by the sun, appreciated by Buddhi. And the lower, well, it's the strictly mental influences of Venus. They fade away. Although, you know, we have to say that the solar angel is a very great expression of intuition. We see that, you know, when we, when we go here, you see that on the fourth plane, the Buddhic plane, which is the plane of the human creative hierarchy, the comment is made, solar angels, Agnish Vatas, Buddhic. So, and I think these solar angels have a huge Buddhic content, but they are, at a certain point, finding it no longer necessary to share the type of contact which strictly induces mentality. For a long time, they have nurtured the mentality of the growing human being. But there comes a point when they can certainly add to the intuitive content which the human being appreciates. So one aspect of the solar angel, the intellectual aspect, the mental illumination aspect, is fading. But perhaps other aspects of it, since it is such an intuitive being, are given and increase. Well, I guess the solar angel's purpose is to lead us to the very center of our nature, which we could not so rapidly do without this solar angelic bridge. A man would remain a fragmented being for far longer without the good offices of the solar angel, which create the bridge, which we can interpret astrologically as Venus leading to the spiritual triad, Venus leading to Jupiter, Venus leading to Neptune, Venus leading to Uranus ultimately. Although I think Uranus particularly represents the logoic nature of the monad, which I suspect does exist. The monad is that which has its true home within the sun. The logoic plane is ruled by Leo. The sun is intimately related to Leo. So the essential nature of the monad, I think, is found in this Leonian sea of fire and is most related to the sun via this sea of fire. Liberated as a liberated volatile essence which has its true home within the sun. Of course, if that, you know, that's probably not the ultimate source of the monad. It gets a little bit difficult, you know, because monads do wander along the various paths to different stellar and constellational locations, even though we are told that the monad is that which has its, or is that which has its true home within the sun. Now, we look here at the moon. Very important fall. The moon is here regarded as functioning in its true nature. It's because so often a false nature is revealed by our glamorizations and romanticizations of the moon. We deify it when instead something behind it is the deity and not the moon itself. Moon having been simply an aspect of our planetary logos, although you do wonder about the life of the moon chain and that emanation from our planetary logos, which was the life of the moon chain, where is it now? These emanations don't just disappear. These chain lords don't just disappear. There may be some kind of composite directorship of our fourth chain, with both chain lords involved, namely the chain lord of the fourth chain and of the third. But anyway, the moon is here regarded as functioning in its true nature and therefore as expressing that which is dead. After all, Scorpio is the sign of death. The moon is truly dead. It has no real emanation of its own. It has some kind of effluvium connected with it. It has not really emanation, but the results of decay, D-E-C-A-Y, spread in space and passing off in noxious fumes or vapors, as one of the teachers is saying, either DK or HPB. So this is the part of ourselves which has been so tremendously attractive and misleading, which must finally fall into death and be entirely transformed by other planetary energies. We have all kinds of lunar tendencies correlated with the movements of the moon. They are ancient tendencies. They're not the results really of any kind of true radiation, and they have to at least die to their old rhythms and be transformed by newer rhythms from the planets which the moon supposedly veils, Vulcan, Neptune, and Uranus. The moon here stands for the personality, just as Mars does. Maybe the moon is most connected symbolically with the emotional nature and Mars with the physical nature, but they both stand for the personality. The moon here stands for the personality and in the final victory in Scorpio. Now, what is that? The third degree? Or is that, in fact, the fourth degree, in a sense? In the final victory in Scorpio, the personality is entirely vanquished and defeated. Well, the ancient authority of the personality is relinquished, overcome, at the third degree. But there are still issues in the consciousness of the man which may have to be vanquished and finally defeated at the self-relinquishing fourth degree. So Scorpio bringing in the fourth ray, I wouldn't be surprised to see it correlated with the fourth initiation, though in a different way than through its testing presence of the three vehicles in the first three initiations. Perhaps the entire personality and its ability to relinquish itself in favor of the soul, and not only of the soul, but in favor of the spirit, because the Antichrist has been built. The entire personality is defeated then at the fourth degree. But also an aspect of humanity's personality is defeated or uplifted and then redeemed. It's never strictly an individual process when dealing with the fourth degree. It becomes somewhat planetary, and humanity is elevated through the fourth degree relinquishment of the candidate for that degree. Anyway, in the final victory in Scorpio, he doesn't say which one that is. I don't see how it can be the second initiation, because even though that's the initiation with which Scorpio is most identified, peculiar testing presence goes on into the third degree, and like I say, you know, stages the release of Leo, which is another way of stages the release from the causal body. The fourth degree seems implicated. Certainly Pluto does. In the final victory in Scorpio, the personality is entirely vanquished and defeated. Desire is killed. Well, not just the desire of the desire body, but the whole personality is an instrument of desire. Or it is through expressed desire of some kind that personality demonstrates life, quality, and appearance. The solar plexus is involved here, and just in the way the soul is identified with the heart, we can say the personality is strongly identified with the solar plexus. There are still desires remaining after the second degree, of course. There may be high desires, relatively, but they do remain. And even after the third degree, they do remain. Even if it's the desire to express the entire content of the causal body, independently of what the plan may require at a particular time. So ponder on this. For in Scorpio, the moon falls, and its influence fades out. Finally, the personality really is overcome. I think we can say that the personality is overcome at the third degree, with some vestiges remaining. Overcome. But, and I think we can say, and the trans personality or expression of the causal body is overcome at the fourth degree. Because there is a sense in which the expression of the causal body is really the expression of all the accumulated personalities that have been. It's still individual. It's still, in a way, transpersonal, but still has that individual content. And we are looking for the planetary content. We are looking to be planetary beings that simply make our accumulations instrumental to a higher purpose. So that really doesn't happen until the fourth degree. So the moon falls. The moon is the fourth ray. Mercury is the fourth ray. Mercury is the hierarchical ruler, and the moon, fourth ray moon, falls. There's something about the square being overcome here. Something about the square having to rise to its pyramidal position and become the five, serving the fifth kingdom of nature. We are no longer prisoners of the square when the moon falls. And the square stands for the four elementals, the three, and their composite, the personality. So it falls away out of consciousness. The soul comes into consciousness. The personality becomes entirely instrumental. I suppose we can look at that at the third degree, pretty much. And then, eventually, even the soul-infused personality, which is now pretty much there, you know, with 75% atomic matter in the lower vehicles, the soul infusion is pretty complete, but even that soul-infused personality has to fall away or somehow be uplifted or translated into a triadal state. Always a new demand is placed upon us. A new opportunity for elevation and a new challenge, because there are aspects of our nature, as high as they may be, that don't want to be elevated beyond the point of comfort that they have achieved. So everyone is faced with his or her challenges. Even souls are faced with their challenges to become a more expansive type of consciousness, more expansive than is possible within a causal body, within the limitations of the Temple of Solomon, more expansive, and thus the temple has to be destroyed. So extremes ever meet in the disciple who stands at this midway point, or at the center of the fixed cross in Scorpio. Now, I guess what this means is you can stand at the center of the fixed cross in a number of ways. Whoops, that wasn't so good. You can stand at the center of the fixed cross, but you're in Scorpio if you're born in or under Scorpio, especially in Scorpio. You can stand at the center of the fixed cross born in Taurus, born in Leo, born in Aquarius. Standing at the center of the fixed cross is the requirement for all, but perhaps there are special testing pressures upon the one who is strongly Scorpionic and is standing in the middle of the fixed cross. It's a very fourth-ray position, and the extremes are conflicting in under the fourth ray, which Scorpio expresses more than any other sign at this time. So it is the friction of the opposites meant to achieve the harmony of the Buddhic plane into which the disciple is released when the causal body is destroyed, and at the same time personality destroyed as well. Although, interestingly, those vehicles, I suppose, at least the personality vehicle, may be kept for a while. Not being a Maya Virupa, as to what happens to the causal body, maybe it's not kept, even while the personality is kept. And this means there's a direct connection between the triadal nature and the personality, the soul-infused personality. So that's interesting, because some, you know, not everybody dies at the time they achieve the fourth degree. But maybe their causal body dies. There's been a translation of quality into the triad. And whatever is left of the personality is entirely reconditioned by the soul presence within it. Extremes ever meet in the disciple who stands at this midway point, or the center of the fixed cross in Scorpio. First ray, Scorpio, latent first ray, the sign of Hercules, and the fourth ray of interacting opposites in dire conflict first, in dire conflict, and then later in increasing harmony. The spiritual imagination, again, you know, suggesting somehow the fourth ray, because if we start numbering the senses from the fifth subplane of the astral plane, when we go in this way, sort of 5, 4, 3, 2, imagination's found on the second, and this is the fourth step. So the four has much to do with imagination. The spiritual imagination, which is the factor of greatest service to man, not a factor, but the factor of greatest service to man, the spiritual imagination, acting as if, visualizing what must become, until what is visualized becomes what is, or correlates with what is. The spiritual imagination, which is the factor of greatest service to man, begins to take the place of the ancient glamour by means of which we have fabricated the untrue world in which we appear to live and move and have our being. So we have created something in the subtle worlds, in the Kamamanasic worlds, involving sort of lower octaves of Mercury and Venus, Venus for the astral and Mercury for the mental here. We have created patterns which just don't reflect the archetype, and which we take for real. Well, they are actual enough, but not real, and they are very transient, because anything that is not sustained by an archetype is going to be transient. So we've fabricated this untrue world, and through the power of our creative imagination, we can begin to unmake it and reconfigure what is truer to reality, letting the old patterns which have been habitually sustained die away because they are not fed. So that reminds us of the yoga idea that when a thought contrary to yoga arises, replace it with a thought which is in accordance with the yoga, and the old will die of attrition. But that takes kind of a fourth-ray counteractive approach, detecting what is old and false, and then reconfiguring it, remaking it through the power of the creative imagination. I think we can see how Scorpio can begin to imagine a world which is truer to the reality it hopes to achieve on the higher planes. The self-indulgence which was initiated in Taurus, interesting there, because Taurus is the last sign on the clockwise wheel, and we will sort of refocus our desires, ready to take another plunge to fulfill those desires, using the energy of Aries to do so. Let form again be sought. So the self-indulgence which was initiated in Taurus gives way in Scorpio to the selfless attitude of the disciple. And I think here the sixth petal is involved. Attitudes of altruism are developed in this sixth petal, and sacrifices of the individual nature which are conscious are developed here. And by the time it fully unfolds, with lots of activity going on in the eighth petal, but not full unfoldment, by that time, the person is the initiate of the second degree. And that is the degree which correlates so definitely with the sign of Scorpio. You know, Scorpio is emblematic of the second degree, just the way Capricorn is emblematic of the third. Perhaps no two signs are more emblematic of certain degrees than Scorpio and Capricorn, as much as we may realize how other signs are associated with them. When we think Scorpio, we think the second degree. When we think Capricorn, we think the third, although our knowledge takes us further than those simple thoughts. The self-indulgence which was initiated in Taurus gives way in Scorpio to the selfless attitude of the disciple. Ambition gives way to the executive activity of the soul. Sounds like some third ray and seventh rays involved there. Some directive power, some hardline rays. We're no longer desiring power for ourselves, but we're desiring power to express the intentions of the soul, which are aligned with the divine plan, which express the intentions of the planetary logos. So the personal type of ambition, which is even intensified in Capricorn, both signs can be very ambitious, both signs connected in some ways with the Black Lodge through Mars and Saturn, and they are lords of ambition, those people. Ambition gives way to executive activity of the soul, whilst attachment to personality desires, likes and dislike, a great place to overcome sentimentality, right? Liking and disliking with which certain people hold each other in bondage. Whilst attachment to personality desires, likes and dislikes, is transmuted into the tenacity of soul purpose. Well, it's got a real grip. Almost reminds you of Vulcan. Vulcan is the tenacious planet. And, to be associated particularly with Scorpio? Well, through the will aspect, perhaps. Scorpio, a very gripping and tenacious sign. Cancer, tenacious as well, and Scorpio adding even more willpower to the tenacity. So we get rid of all of these adhesions which have made us selfishly self-indulgent, and we begin to have ambition, not for our lower selves, but for something that must happen according to the divine plan. And we just allow to fall away, to be killed off, to be negated, so many of our preferences based upon desires in the lower worlds. We had the tenacious pursuit of our personality desires. Now we have tenacity of will, of purpose. So it's almost like at the second degree, this is how it happens, I think. At the second degree, second degree, desire gives place to will. So it's one of the first true expressions of spiritual will. Desire gives place to will. That's the big battle that's being fought out there. Can personal desire give, under Mars, give place to spiritual will under Vulcan? So we can definitely connect Vulcan with Scorpio at the second degree, because it represents the spiritual will, which comes in and says, okay, you may have wanted this as a person, but what do you really will as a soul? Then the conflict between those two is on, and I think that conflict appears on a still higher turn of the spiral at the third degree, when the moon is veiling Vulcan, I suspect, and fights it out with Mars being the desire and direction of the entire personality. The hidden powers of the soul nature, secret, and there's always the secret of the soul, isn't there? Secret and misused, because misunderstood and misapplied. So we get this energy, but what do we do with it? That's the thing. And therefore misdirected. Look at all these misses. It's one of those words which suggests the glamour and illusion into which Scorpio at first falls when its mantra is let Maya flourish and deception rule. Kind of the personal mantra of Scorpio, which leads to evolutionary progress out of that type of expression. The hidden powers of the soul nature, which even the member, the brother on the left-hand path can utilize, and they do this very well. They misuse, misunderstand, misapply, and misdirect all these energies because their purposes are still those of the hard and isolated lower self, are superseded by the mysteries of initiation. So, an entirely higher program is instituted, And misuse becomes right use, misunderstanding, right understanding, misapplication, right application, misdirection, true direction, because the identification has changed. And the desires under Mars, which confine us to the lower worlds, give place to the first application, first real application of will energy, which is helping us overcome selfishness, a Martian virtue, a Martian quality, at the second degree. Are superseded by the mysteries of initiation. You know how Scorpio loves mysteries and to penetrate into the mysteries. And the practical understanding of the energies thereby conferred upon the recipient. So the understanding, a deeper understanding, occult understanding of soul powers is coming in here at the second degree when Scorpio really takes over. So many virtues here for the second degree initiate and for the human being, for humanity as a whole, as it starts to pass through the various initiations, the first being imminent, also involving Scorpio, of course, because Pluto fights it out, along with Vulcan before the first degree, but humanity's second initiation will loom ahead. I don't think immediately, of course, you know, a rather long time takes place, does it not, for the individual between the first and second degree, so why shouldn't that be so? For the human kingdom now taking the first degree imminently, but having before it the second degree at a later time. There's so much psychological reconditioning that has to be done. So what supersedes here, instead of all this misdirection, the mysteries of initiation come in, and great fascination with these things, and tenacious application, and then the practical understanding of the energies thereby conferred. So you become what do you become? You know, I'm remembering when Manley Hall said, don't mess with it, but you know, you become the practical occultist. He, you know, gave warnings in his various books about what could be the case if you prematurely got into practical occultism, but there does come a time when the dangers have to be faced, and the ancient revelations of unredeemed past lives and so forth, and thus the revelation of the potentially paralyzing dweller has to come, all of this under Scorpio, begin to take the path really in earnest by the time of the second degree and its scorpionic type experience, and you're willing to face the dangers. After all, what's more dangerous in mythology than facing the Hydra? You know, facing a nine-headed dragon, you, the single representative of the soul, facing this nine-headed dragon, the heads of which multiply as you chop them off using only the Martian approach. So that is a danger, but Scorpio is willing to face danger. I was reading recently about some of the exploits of some of these commando groups. They, you know, they are to search, destroy, kill the Navy SEALs, water, Scorpio, I wonder, Pluto, trained assassins for a good purpose, apparently. It seems that some of these people who wield death, certainly the ninja groups, for whatever purpose they wield their arts, again, martial arts under Scorpio in the fourth ray, they are connected. These groups are connected with the first, fourth rays and Scorpio. So they become willing to face danger. They become the true practical occultist. And every occultist knows that there will be arduous presentations of the opponent that must be faced with courage. You know, Christianity, he told us, a religion of high courage, a Scorpionic religion under the sixth ray, high courage, Mars, Scorpio. We have to face the danger and stay calm, stay cool, stay in total possession of our faculties. I was reading about how some of these commando groups, you know, they are characterized by an extreme type of pragmatism and by emotionlessness, in a way. Emotion is not used in furthering of the plan. love takes its place. Well, perhaps in a deeper sense. But the first ray type despises emotion, we are told. And in their very pragmatic executing of the will, even the will to kill for a good purpose, they suspend emotion and are in their willful, practical mind acting with great skill and suddenness and adaptability. Well, it's not for all of us to become commandos of that sort, or even esoteric commandos. Not all of us are on the first ray, but for all of us, it will be courage that is required. That is the age of the heart. And only the tested heart can be truly courageous, because I guess it's rooted in love, and love is that which casts out fear. Interesting that it's not will that casts out fear. I mean, you can will and override fear, but it's a deeper form of love which gives the courage to cast out fear. I guess that's the kind of love that the Christ has been able to express against all the kinds of opposition which were directed towards him. He must have this aura against which, well, of course, he absorbs the arrows, but he has the power somehow to transform that which is absorbed. And as Master Moria said, do not wish ill against the Blessed One, because somehow the arrow sent will return karmically to the sender, especially when they hit the harmless aura of the Blessed One. Some of those Blessed Ones try to absorb the potency of the arrow sent against them so that those arrows do not rebound with too harsh an impact upon the one who sent. This is their altruistic motive. We're going to get into the decanates of the sign Scorpio in the next, and that will be the beginning of Esoteric Astrology Adventure number 80. And I've been trying to also give you some of my own ideas about the decanates from some other tabulations while discussing DK's version of it. We do need to interpret what DK says. We need to explain it to ourselves. We need not to accept these words strictly at face value, undigested. We need to put what is said through the context of our own understanding. This is a bit laborious, but required if we are to make his statements our own. So we have been through a five-section presentation on Scorpio, the extremes of the experience, the use of the creative imagination, the death-dealing of Scorpio, even at the fourth degree, perhaps, staging the release of the limited identity confined within the causal body, so that a greater identity within the true ego of the spiritual triad can occur, the falls, detriments, and exaltations of various planets, giving us the truly powerful occult transformation with Uranus, and seeing the intellect give way to intuition, when Venus is in detriment, and seeing the moon and all that it represents fall away and become entirely overcome with the fall of the moon in Scorpio, giving way to a higher illusion, giving way to real intuition, the illusion of the moon. The moon is in so many ways the mother of illusion, giving way to the higher expression that dispels illusion in the esoteric, the hierarchical ruler of Scorpio, which is Mercury. And think about this. The very highest planet in Scorpio is Mercury, and the exalted ruler in Scorpio is Uranus. Now, look at those two planets. They are the one, the lower octave of the other. Just like Venus is to Neptune, so Mercury is to Uranus. So we have planets deeply anchored in the cosmic ethers, which are the highest rulers of Scorpio. And Scorpio is meant to create that kind of death which allows the translation of the consciousness into the cosmic ethers. Well, there are many things that we have gone through, and you know, some fundamental ideas have been discussed, and I don't think I can review all this right now, but there is a great purification, discipleship purification in Scorpio, and we have to learn how to stand at the center of the fixed cross, of course, whatever sign we're born in, including one of the fixed signs. It is peculiarly intense to stand at the center of the fixed cross when Scorpio guides the entire process. He speaks of the science of relations, and then, you know, he talks very much of how we have to determine the rays before we get to the astrological chart. That's most important. It may be that the ray of the personality or the ray of the soul is not easy to determine, but let us work on that and see what kind of charts we can set up when we actually do know those rays. Not necessarily looking at the chart to indicate the rays, but seeing how the rays, once they are determined, work out in the astrological chart. And here are the different rays, six of them coming in on the fixed cross, but not the third. The third being the ray of the brain, and all this has to work out in the third ray realm, but the concentration is not upon the third ray per se. And then we discussed further, you know, the importance of the different signs, 1, 4, 8, and 11. Quite a bit of discussion there. So for the individual in Scorpio, these other signs are definitely implicated through Mars in the sixth ray. Well, I won't review the whole thing. There's plenty to review. Rather, we'll end this somewhere here. Okay, this is a lot more here than I thought. Anyway, right before the three decanates, we'll say that Esoteric Astrology 79 E ends. Okay, end up. And this is page what? 226. Okay. And begin EAA 80, section A, page 226. And hopefully I can get all of this to you in good shape and before too long. So let us, what we'll do is we'll sound the great invocation together. Which is, I think, always a good way to conclude the program, if not all, each of the hour programs, at least at the end of it all. I think it's useful. So, let us do that. From the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into the minds of men. Let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into the hearts of men. May Christ return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide the little wills of men, the purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center which we call the race of men, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth. Om. Om. Okay, friends, many interesting things about Scorpio, a very rich chapter. He deals with so many things in this chapter. We will continue with our study of the decanates, and for now, we will close. I'll be back to that as soon as I possibly can. It seems that I have to do these programs somewhat in spurts when time is available. I send them all out to you for your study. I know it's an arduous job to study all this stuff. And, of course, listening to the voice, you know, it could be more concisely done if it was in written form and so forth. But I trust maybe the human element will be added here, more conversational element, a more class-like element. And maybe that will affect positively the assimilation of this material. Let us hope so. Okay, we'll be seeing you soon. Bye-bye.